This is our first Easter Mass here in this chapel. So let me greet you properly. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
As I said at the beginning, we're in the octave of Easter. Perhaps it's important to identify the way the liturgy unfolds here. The very high point of the liturgical year is the Triduum, the Paschal Triduum, Easter Triduum, which just finished last night. So as a way of extending the joy of yesterday, Easter Day, we follow this octave, 8 days, so from Easter Sunday up until what's now Divine Mercy Sunday, 8 days. That structure seems to have been based on the first appearance of Jesus in John's Gospel, which was on Easter, and then the second appearance to the Apostles anyway, on the second Sunday. And that time Thomas was with them. So there's a certain scriptural basis to it. We know the scriptural basis for the novena structure, 9 days, comes from the days between the ascension of Jesus and the descent of the Holy Spirit on Pentecost. So we have this Easter octave is a kind of corollary or parallel to the Holy Week. Holy Week from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday, then Easter octave from Easter Sunday to Divine Mercy Sunday. You might notice that Easter Sunday is part of Holy Week, it's part of the Triduum, and it's part of the octave. There's some overlapping. But Easter Sunday is all of them. Easter Sunday is the high point of the whole year. So yes, it's Holy Week. It's also the third day of the Triduum. It's also the first day of the octave. That was yesterday. Here's the second day of the octave, also the fourth day of our Divine Mercy Novena. Well, I give all those little details there because we're still trying to figure out really what's happening, and we joined the women and the apostles in these early hours, and it's very disorienting to try to figure out how and what happened. So in today's gospel, we go back to the account, Matthew's account of the first hours of Easter morning, very early in the morning, Easter day. And then in the first reading, we go to the very first hours or the first hours of Pentecost after the descent of the Holy Spirit. He descended in the morning of the 50th day. And we'll be reflecting on Easter and Pentecost for a couple of days now. So here we are, Matthew's account. This is a continuation of what we heard at the Easter Vigil. Actually, there's also a little overlap because Jesus appearing to Mary Magdalene and the other Mary takes place in the Easter reading as well at the Easter Vigil. And it's a very dramatic scene in Matthew's account. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, they go to the tomb. When they get to the tomb, there's a great earthquake, and an angel comes down from heaven, approaches, rolls back the stone, and sits on the stone. That's a very dramatic scene. The other Gospels don't record those details. The guards, who are there to guard the tomb and make sure that nobody steals the body, they can't very well protect the stone from an angel. They were shaken with fear of him, of the angel, and became like dead men. So maybe they fainted. And then the angel spoke to the women, who apparently didn't faint. They were still awake. They're not dead men. They're living women. And the angel tells them, well, do not be afraid. You're seeking the crucified Jesus, but he's not here. He's been raised. You can look at the place if you want to, but he's not here. So go tell his disciples that he has been raised from the dead and they should go to Galilee. The apostles should go to Galilee. So, and then as they go running off to tell the apostles, as we heard this on Saturday evening, and they go running off, and then Jesus himself appears to them and tells them, do not be afraid. So this is where we pick up today. They're running. There's a lot of running in the Easter octave. And the Lord himself appears. His very first words, "Do not be afraid," which indicates on one level, well, they must have been afraid. Well, it says they were fearful. They were fearful, yet they were overjoyed, meaning there was a confusion or a mixture of very powerful emotions going on, as you could imagine. Well, actually, we can't imagine. What is it like to go and see an angel roll a stone away? What is it like to approach a tomb where we expect a dead body and find out that he's alive? That's the earthquake. But his first words in Matthew's gospel are addressed to the two women, "Do not be afraid." Now, this brings up the question, well, who did Jesus risen appear to first, and what did he say? In the Gospels, are all different. You know, the Salubong tradition is that he first appeared to his mother, because what else would a man do? He would visit his mother right away. Or that Mary herself was at the tomb, Mary, the Blessed Mother. Anyway, that's not in the scriptures, although it's not hard to imagine that one either. How else would Mary, the Blessed Virgin Mary, find out that he was risen? How else? I mean, wouldn't he tell her himself? But anyway, the different Gospels have different traditions. Matthew's version is the one we hear today. In Mark's version, the angel tells them, I think it's the angel that tells them that Jesus is risen, and they run away afraid and they don't tell anybody. But then in Luke's version, the very first people who see the risen Lord are the two disciples also running away from Jerusalem. They're on the road to Emmaus. And his first words to them are not, "Do not be afraid," but, "What are you talking about? What are you discussing as you walk along?" And then in John's version, well, the first one he appears to is certainly Mary Magdalene, but the first time he appeared, when he appears to Mary Magdalene, his first words to her are, "Woman, why are you weeping?" See how different it is. And then his first appearance to the apostles in John, his first words are, "Peace be with you," which is something similar to "Do not be afraid," but not exactly the same. Peace be with you. So many accounts of this mind-boggling event. Okay, let's stick with this one, Matthew. So Jesus appears to the women. He gives them the instruction to go to the disciples and tell them to go to Galilee, and that's where they're going to see him, not in the locked room, but in Galilee. That's the high level of what's going on here. Angels, miracles, Jesus' appearance, risen from the dead, glory. Then in the second part of this gospel, we come right back down to earth, and we get to corruption, bribery, scandal, lying, pretty much what we experience in the world. What am I talking about? The story that the chief priests and the elders came up with, and the money that they gave to the guards, it doesn't say how much, but it says it gave them a large sum of money. We wonder, did they pay more for Jesus dead than they paid for him alive? When he was alive, they only paid 30 pieces of silver. Now that he's dead, maybe they paid each of the guards another 30 pieces. Anyway, so they bribed the guards to tell this false story that his disciples stole the body while they were asleep. Which is a kind of a backward acknowledgement that he's not still in the tomb. The body is not in the tomb. Even those who resist the truth of the resurrection acknowledge that there's no evidence of Jesus' body anywhere, and there never has been. And even the worst enemies of Christianity don't claim that his body is somewhere. His bones are in some tomb somewhere. Now, there's a lot of other stories that have been circulated by maybe good intention or by heretics about what happened. This is the one that's recorded by Matthew, that his body was stolen, and that's why the tomb was empty. And then, according to that version, all these accounts of his apparitions are all just stories. Or visions, or dreams or wishful thinking or lying. But then there's another heretical tradition that says that Jesus wasn't really the one who died on the cross. He got substituted somehow. So the body that got buried wasn't really Jesus' body. He was still alive. So if he's still alive, it's because he was never dead in the first place. That's a heresy. Then there's the various traditions about hallucinations and visions and myths and all sorts of different things. But at least we know from the scriptures there's no body in the tomb. Now, we don't know exactly what Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were thinking, and we don't know exactly what